You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Every single individual matters, and every single individual makes an impact on the planet every day. When I heard that, I felt like I was listening to Scott. We hear that on Sunday mornings from the piano seat about our interconnectedness, and it just resonated with me, and I wanted to share that with you this morning. I thought it was just beautiful. So, we move into the next part of our service. Two weeks ago, I was conducting, and I brought a copy of Greta's second book, which was called Amen. And I brought it down, and I wanted to share something from it. And I wanted to do that again this morning. And as I did 2 weeks ago, I came down and I asked David if he would just hold on to Greta's book. I'll tell you a very short story about, I don't know how long ago Greta published her first book. It's got to be close to 8 or 9 years. My son worked for the company, the publisher, and I was fortunate enough to get a copy of the unreviewed proof of her first book. I actually was fortunate enough to get a copy of her book before she got a copy of her book. And I can remember, I got two copies, and I can remember taking one copy and wrapping it in brown paper and sitting at a board meeting and sliding it across the table to her. And you can imagine the thought that goes through people's mind when you wrap a book in brown paper and you give it to them, right? So it was the first time that she had had an opportunity to see her book. So she took it and she inscribed it for me. And the words that she used become important to what we do right here, right now. The words she used are, "The road we share is always the most challenging," and in capital letters, "and the most beautiful." And that's what our sharing time is about. It's about being on that road together. It's about looking at the challenges that we have in our life, being aware of them. And it's also about sharing the beauty that comes into our lives. So every Sunday we come here and we spend a couple of hours together. And we do this so that we can be in community, striving to be fulfilled, striving to share comfort and connection with one another. And when we do that, we tap into our awareness. We tap into our interconnectedness. And an integral part of our service is to raise that level of awareness of what's touched our hearts and our minds. Over the course of the past week, we draw our mind to those joys and those sorrows that have come into our life, and those things that have touched us on a personal level, and those things that have touched us from a distance as well. So most of you know the drill. We do this in three parts. And the first part, we talk about those places where the world is broken. We reflect on a world where there is discord, perhaps caused by natural occurrences, perhaps by political turmoil or violence. And we focus our attention on those places and people who are battling oppression, discrimination, inequality, poverty, strife, and generally brokenness. So as you've been touched by what is happening in the world, I invite you to share that by offering the names of those places and those peoples in distress into this place.
My earring. Oh.
in this, our time of need. And as we turn our focus a little bit more inward, we become more vulnerable. We open ourselves and share those things that have brought smiles or perhaps tears. And as you share those things, the congregation rallies and surrounds you with their love and their support. You can see from the refrains that we have up on the screens what we say as we share our sorrows and our joys. And we have microphones on both sides of the hall. So what rests lightly and what rests heavily on your hearts this morning?
In terms of devotion to this church, I just wanted to point out at the auction, at the upcoming auction, Greta has made a stunning jewelry set, and she's offering it to the auction. I, on the other hand, am offering myself. I think that's a higher level of devotion than she is demonstrating. Which brings me to say, she's doing well. The doctor is seeing her last week and this week and is enforcing this rest period for her, which is a challenge. Some of us rest quite easily on our own and some of us don't. But she sends her love and support and gratitude as always. And because I put this together and showed her last night, I'm going to ask us if we could sing the sharing song, unless there was a reason not to. No. So I invite you to see what I showed her last night for our song of the Web of Life.
The way we see the world shapes the way we treat it. If a mountain is a deity, not a pile of ore, if a river is one of the veins of the land, not potential irrigation water, if a forest is a sacred grove, not timber, if other species are our biological kin, not resources, or if the planet is our mother, not an opportunity, then we will treat each other with greater respect. That is the challenge, to look at the world from a different perspective. That was written by David Suzuki and is offered as wisdom for the journey. Both of the next readings were written by Al Gore. Here's the truth. The earth is round. Saddam Hussein did not attack us on 9/11. Elvis is dead. Obama was born in the United States. And the climate crisis is real. Offered as wisdom for the journey. I have come to believe that the world's ecological balance depends on more than just our ability to restore a balance between civilization's ravenous appetite for resources and the fragile equilibrium of the Earth's environment. In the end, we must restore a balance within ourselves between who we are and what we are doing. Each of us must take a greater personal responsibility. Each of us must take a hard look at the habits of mind and action that reflect and have led to this grave crisis. Many years from now, today's children will inherit the earth we bequeath to them. And depending on the circumstances in which they find themselves, they will ask one of two questions. What were you thinking? How could you have done this to us? Or How did you find the moral courage to change boldly and quickly and save our future? The time for us to answer that question is now, by seeking the truth about the reality we are confronting, by using the power we'll have to bring about the necessary and urgent changes, and by never forgetting that the will to change is itself a renewable resource offered as wisdom for the journey.
It feels a little unusual for me to be introducing somebody that I think pretty much everybody in this hall already knows. And especially for me, because I've had the opportunity since first coming here about 11 and a half years ago to share a pew and a podium and a meeting table with Deb Ellis. Annie wrote in Friday's e-blast, she said, Deb shares her contagious energy and warmth. And we've all seen that many, many times. How does she do that? Well, you've all seen her behind this podium welcoming you. You've seen her as a conductor when Greta's away. Deb's led the book study over the past couple of years. She was on the recruitment team when Greta was brought to this congregation. She's a member of the choir. She's facilitated numerous sessions at this congregation, and she's currently the co-chair of the Friends of Greta Vosper Association, and there's other stuff in there that I haven't even mentioned. So she's got her finger in a lot of pies, and she's very involved, and she's one of our wonderful church mice here at West Hill. Now, she also has a life outside of this congregation. She is a training and development consultant. So I'm reading this part. Training and development consultant based in the Greater Toronto Area. And through her business, Wings to Fly. Now, does that sound like Deb? Right? Wings to Fly. She provides tools for success to organizations, teams, and individuals, facilitating leadership and personal growth and development workshops. She has a master's degree in education, and she's been guest speaker at a number of prestigious organizations and schools. Most, if not all of you, know that Deb has had the privilege of being trained last fall by former U.S. Vice President Al Gore to serve as a volunteer climate reality leader and ambassador. Her passion for this issue flows from her love of nature, her understanding of our interconnectedness, and her belief in our responsibility to be stewards to our planet so that future generations can experience the same joy. Some of you may have heard of a consultant. He's kind of the consultant's consultant. His name is Peter Block, and he defines stewardship as choosing service over self-interest. And I think that describes Deb to a T. So please welcome our friend, Deb Ellis.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everybody. Usually when I say that, I'm starting off the morning for us. I am surprised at how nervous I am. This is my home people. But I'm hoping that you can see those really clearly, because the presentation is very slide dependent, so let me know if we need to turn off the lights or anything to make it a bit more clear. But I'm glad to say that spring has finally arrived, as Jean was saying this morning, although even as recently as Friday, I was feeling a bit like this guy. You can't see him, but he's saying, brr, chilling winds, icy rain, freezing temperatures. Where the hell is the greenhouse effect when we need it? Which is how I felt a little bit last Sunday on my way in an ice storm to Orillia to give this presentation as well. Many of you have been hearing for months that I was trained by Al Gore in the fall, and so I'm excited to finally be able to present to you some of what I learned. I'm coming to you as a citizen, not as a climate scientist. So that's important that you know that. I'm coming to you as one of you who has done this training and is excited to share this. Al Gore talks about chains of inspiration. So he inspired me, and hopefully I'll inspire you in some little way, and then you go out and you inspire other people. My love of nature started early. That's my mom and dad, who I didn't know were going to be here till about 10:35 this morning. And that's me. They're Salvation Army officers for their careers. And so they got 3 weeks of holidays, and we would go up north to a cottage. I use the term loosely. A cottage up on Lake Shibishakong. And that's where I fell in love with nature. And many of you will share that experience. You know, the smell of the pine and the sounds of the loons and the gulls and the, you know, sound of the water lapping and the smell of rain on the forest floor. That's where I fell in love with nature. Over the years, you know, I grew up and I went to school and I got a job and I bought a house and did all that. So life carried on. I was kind of aware of the climate change thing over here, you know, and I was doing all the stuff you do. You take your groceries and your cloth bags, and you know, I drive a small car and try to eat not as much meat, and I, you know, try to recycle and all that good stuff. But I kind of had that feeling that climate change, like, somebody is probably going to take care of that, right? Like, cause, you know, somebody has to. And it wasn't until the fall when Greta said, you know, you should really go do that Alcor training course in Pittsburgh, and it changed my life. These are my people. I don't know if you can see that very well, but it's my mom and dad in the middle, and my brother and his wife and their two girls, and then Rob and the two kids who are also here today at the back. And the reality is that those four people in the front row, the Ontario that they're going to know in 30 years, 40, 50 years, is likely to look very different than the Ontario that we know and love today. And so that's where I want to go with this, to give you some information about this. This is a picture of our home. This is the first picture of Earth that was taken where it was fully illuminated. It was taken in 1972 in the Apollo 17 mission when they were halfway between the Earth and the Moon, and they looked back and saw that. And it changed the way humanity saw itself, right? We're all like hanging in space on this pale blue dot, and there's no lines on those continents. We drew those in on the maps ourselves, and so we're actually all just kind of one living on this planet, and what we do on one side of the planet actually does impact people on the other side. However, that's really hard for us to wrap our heads around, and there are reasons for that. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. We have a sort of a Stone Age brain that's affecting us, and so I want to see if this is true for you. You won't be able to see those. Someday I'm going to start eating better. I've got to start saving for retirement, like, soon. I can stay up late tonight, and I'll just catch up on my sleep on the weekend. I should try meditation sometimes. I hear it's really good for you. I've got to get going on my taxes. Oh, my God. And someday soon, I'm going to start going to the gym. So does anybody resonate with one of those? All of them? Yeah, so you're proving one of the things I'm talking about, which is some brain science stuff. And that is that our brains are not wired to deal with things that are coming down the road, right? Sort of big, slow-moving things. That's not what we're wired evolutionarily to handle. What we're wired to handle are pain problems, right? And pain I'm using as an acronym here. Things that are personal, things that are abrupt changes happening in our immediate environment, things we see as immoral or indecent, and things that are happening now, right? Climate change is not perceived by most of us as an imminent threat, right? That's what we're trained for, to get out of the way when a tiger is coming at us, etc., right? So our brains are kind of working against us in a number of ways. That's one of them. Can you see that? Ah, right? What about this? Ah! Right. And this one is my favorite. Ah! Green peppers. That's your brain at work, right? It's taking, we're looking for patterns, we're looking for instant danger so we can get out of the way. We're the ones who, those are the ones who pass their genes on to us. Helpful in many cases, but not helpful for us today. A few other things that I'm going to have you sort of thinking about as I go through the material. We have an optimism bias. So bad things happen to other people, not to us. Right? Confirmation bias. So we have what we believe, and then they've shown that as information comes in, we filter it. And the stuff that already agrees with what we already think, we let that in. And anything that kind of counters what we believe, we filter it out. Social groups. You know, when we were evolving, if you were outside of your social group, it's almost certain death, right? So for those of us who may be parts of families or groups where they're, you know, I don't believe in this climate change thing, right? Well, that's anxiety-provoking to have to say, well, actually, I think there's some good science behind that, right? And again, it's not logical. It's coming from back here, from that ancient brain. Cognitive dissonance, right? So the information that's coming in is giving us stuff that we don't want to think about ourselves. I don't want to think that I've been stupid about this all these years. I've been looking at this, and no. So I'm just going to keep believing this, right? And last two, finite pool of worry. We can only worry about so much, right? And for a lot of us, just getting through the day, just handling what we have to handle, is pretty much all we can take, right? And that's a reality that we have to deal with around this issue. Finally, we know that people avoid things that make them feel fearful. And a lot of the climate change stuff has been like this, you know, the apocalypse is coming. And frankly, as an aside, there's some pretty scary stuff out there. But that's not what motivates people to act. So I'm not today going to say, here's what it's going to look like in 50 years if we don't do something right now. What's happening in 50 years just does not motivate people to act. What I'm going to do is share information about what's actually happening right now. Climate change is not coming. It's happening already. So I'm going to share some of that around the world, and particularly about Toronto and Ontario and how we are going to be affected, and how we're already being affected. So your job is to keep that stuff in mind as I go through and try and fight against all those natural biases that we have. And my job is to give you information and hopefully inspire you to action. How's that sound? Still with me? Excellent. All right, there are three questions essentially that still remain around the climate change crisis. And these are the three questions we're going to look at this morning. The first one is, must we change? Do we have to change? Secondly, can we change? Because if we must and we can't, I don't want to hear about it, right? And thirdly, will we change? And we're going to start with this one. Must we change? This, I'm no climate science, but just so that we sort of set the stage, this is just the basics of the climate science stuff. So the sun sending down energy, the earth absorbs a lot of it, sends some of it back up in the form of infrared rays. And thankfully for us, there's enough greenhouse gases up there, just the right amount, to keep the Earth just the perfect temperature. So we're the Goldilocks planet, is what they call us, right? Not too hot, not too cold, just perfect. So that's all good and well, except that we're beginning to put lots of pollution up there, and we're thickening the atmosphere with CO2. So that's the basic idea of the climate science, as many of you will know. This is a picture of our atmosphere that I've just been talking about. And how many of you have heard that analogy that if the Earth was like a basketball, how thick is the atmosphere around the basketball? Anybody heard this analogy before? What would you guess? What's that? Yeah, it's about the thickness of saran wrap. A saran wrap around a that's our atmosphere. And that's, as Al Gore says, what we're treating as an open sewer. We're putting 110 million tons of pollution up into the atmosphere every single day, every 24 hours. The equivalent, just to give you, because that wouldn't mean anything to me, I don't know what that means, is like setting off 400,000 atomic bombs every day. Every day. That's what we're doing to the atmosphere. So no wonder we're having an impact on that thin saran wrap. There are many causes of global warming. We won't get into all of those, but of course transportation, the permafrost is melting, animal agriculture is a big one, but the biggest by far is fossil fuel burn consumption, which has really increased since World War II ended. And of course, concomitantly, we have an increase in global temperatures around the world because we're trapping that gas. 16 of the 17 hottest years on record have been since 2001. 2016 was the hottest on record. 2017 was just marginally below that, but it didn't have the El Nino effect. In fact, 2017, was the 40th consecutive year on record of higher than average temperatures from as compared with the 20th century. So it's happening. This is a little video from NASA. Just shows you from 1880 to 2016. So here we are in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2007, 2012. So we've gone from we've gone from that cool sort of blue skies that you saw there to that orange in a very short period of time. What's going on here? There we go. So the jury is not out on climate change. It's very clear that it's happening, and we need to do something about it. So I'm going to talk just briefly about some of the consequences that we're seeing now for humans around the planet. The first is actually the heat itself. We are not designed to handle this kind of heat, and we're seeing increasing temperatures around the world. I don't know if you can see, but this is an airplane in Washington Airport where the tires have melted into the tarmac. The passengers had to get off the plane and go get on another one. Sydney, Australia, 117 degrees last February, breaking records. Kuwait City got to 124 degrees last year, and they had birds dying and dropping out of the sky from the heat. Oops. Last August. This guy is melted into the road in Turkey. And in May 2016, India set a new all-time record for heat. We're seeing incidents in India where they're actually having, you know, thousands of people who are dying just from heat exposure itself. 2,300 people in 2015 heat wave. Pakistan, record temperatures. And again, there they had 1,200 people die in that one heat wave alone. So the heat itself is having a big impact. They're actually saying that the Middle East, if we continue as we are, is likely to become uninhabitable. It'll be so hot, it'll be on the limits of human survival in the Middle East. What about Ontario? That's what we look like. 60 years of average annual temperature increases. So it's happening here too. Secondly, extreme storms. We heard a lot about all this last year, right? All the hurricanes, etc. I think part of this is we read this, oh, that's a bad storm. Oh, look at that fire. Oh, look at that flood. But when you see them all separately, it's kind of, that's terrible. When you see them all put together and you understand some of the reasons for that, then you see the real impact that we're having. So, in terms of the storms, they're getting worse because 90% of the heat that we're generating is going into our oceans. Which you might think, like, well, perfect, let them soak it up, right? Kind of an initial response. Not so perfect for many reasons. One of which is, as storms are approaching land, typically they're churning up water from the ocean. And that cools the storm and dissipates the energy in the hurricane as it approaches land. What we saw with Hurricane Harvey, it crossed over the Gulf of Mexico with waters that were 7 degrees hotter than they should have been, right to the bottom of the Gulf. So it was churning up hot water as it went over and approached land. So it was gaining energy, gaining steam, gaining strength as it approached. And they got 33 trillion gallons of water dumped on them in the space of a few days. So for comparison, that's about equal to the flow of Niagara Falls for 509 days. 509 days of that fell on Houston in 3 or 4 days. It's just astonishing. And so no wonder they were underwater. Seniors and the poor are more affected than others when these events happen for multiple reasons. These folks were rescued shortly after this photo was taken, thankfully, but they were up to chest water for many, many hours waiting for rescue. And the word is that if we continue as we are, then we're going to just see many more Harveys. That's going to sort of become the norm in the future. This is India. This was happening at the same time as Harvey was happening on the other side of the world. 1,400 people died in the flooding in India while we were looking at Harvey. Then came along Irma. And she stayed a Category 5 for 3 days, and the scientists had never seen that before. And so one of the interesting things that happened last fall at the training, they had these scientists from around the world coming to talk about this stuff, and particularly in the wake of these storms that had just happened. And one of them said, one of the realities is that we are likely to have to change the categories that we've created because we don't have anything big enough for what's happening now. We never expected this to happen, and so we didn't create the categories for them. So we're probably going to have to make up new categories for this kind of strength of storm. And, of course, devastating on the people and the infrastructure of these. That's what they call a rain bomb, and we're seeing more of these. That's in Phoenix, Arizona. So these extreme precipitation events are happening more and more frequently. You can actually see it sort of splashing back up off the city. It's like a big mushroom cloud. That's India underwater. This is Spain. These people are being taken down the road by the flooded water. What about us? We're seeing more of these events also. That was us in 2013. That's a giant tiger underwater. This was a GO train downtown. These are all from that rainstorm in July of 2013. That's a TTC bus underwater. I had tons of images I could show you. This is Annie's office. Just kidding. I don't know if you've seen Annie's office, but it looks something like that right now. Highway 427 in Burnhamthorpe, unrecognizable. $850 million in property damage in that one storm for Toronto. So, you know, again, there are many, many directions you can go with that, but one of them is our insurance is going to go up for sure. And we'll talk about that in a second. This is the same year in December, the ice storm that wreaked havoc. So that's one of the consequences. Often people will say, well, how can you blame climate change, or how can you use climate change as the reason for all this, you know, precipitation and for all the drought? Doesn't make sense, right? Actually, it makes sense because it's the same thing happening. The same hot air that's sucking the moisture out of the oceans and creating these big precipitation events is sucking the water out of the land, too. And so we're seeing these droughts all around the world. I'll just show you quickly. These are all in 2017. This is Brazil. This is Italy, Po River, longest river in Italy, dried up. There's Spain. This is France. This is South Korea, 11% of their reservoirs left. China, worst drought on record. India, worst drought in 140 years. This is South Africa, the Cape. I mentioned to you before, my fiancé's sister and her husband live in South Africa. And that's their little family a few years ago now. But that's what they're facing is day zero when the city officially runs out of water. What about here in Ontario? What's happening? This is us in 2016. It's hard for you to see probably, but you can tell the brown and the yellow is not good. Toronto was in that brown phase of extremely low precipitation. And just above us in Orillia, they reached record dry temperatures up there. So, of course, when you have that kind of drought, you don't have crops and you don't have food to feed people. And so we have millions of people facing starvation because of these events. And, of course, that has a cascading effect in terms of food scarcity and in terms of security around the world. Hotter years typically have more fires. Surprise, surprise, right? We saw this in Canada. This is Fort McMurray. A couple of years ago, 100,000 people evacuated. BC last summer had their the worst fire season ever on record in their history. They lost a million hectares of land in 1,300 fires. And of course, it's not just the land, right? Like, it's all of those animals and creatures that burn too. And what an awful that must be. And that's worldwide too. They were in California. I don't know if you can see this. This is Washington. These golfers seem completely unfazed by the fact that there's a raging forest fire behind them. It's just become like, oh, yeah, it's another forest fire. Yeah. This is France on fire. Here we have Portugal. They lost 35 people last October. Fires. This is Russia, and that's not particularly astonishing. It's more that it's a lead into a situation in Russia that happened in 2010, and I even remember this. I don't know if you do, but they had 55,000 people killed in fires in Russia in 2000. It was like this horrible event that happened, and I don't even remember hearing about that. One of the consequences was they shut down the borders to the exports. And so then we saw food prices in these spikes as a result. So again, these sort of cascading impacts that we're seeing already. There's the food price index, and there's in response to these events, these extreme weather events. So this is the insurance industry. This is what they're saying. Worldwide extreme weather catastrophes, definitely on the rise. That's since 1980 to 14. Now, what about sea level rise? That's what you always hear with climate change, right? Ooh, the seas are rising. And it's true. This is Greenland in 1935, and in 2013, completely melted. NASA's been NASA has been carefully measuring the decline, and it's very clear in both of those places. This is a quick 30-second video that explains some of what's going on.
Ice sheets rest on the ocean floor and can melt from both above and below sea level.
We have warm waters that are near those ice sheets. And if those warm waters actually touch the marine ice sheets melt, and you have big changes in sea level.
As the marine ice sheets melt, the land-based ice behind them moves more quickly toward the sea. And this poses the greatest threat for rapid sea level rise.
So what does that mean? Well, here's Miami, Florida. This is what they call rainy day, or a sunny day tide. So it's become just regular now for even when they haven't had rain in a long time. That's actually Al Gore. Walking through the rain. He was there to do this presentation in Miami, Florida, and that's what he was walking through along the streets of Miami. So when we look at who are the cities at risk from the sea level rise, Miami tops the list, and you see it going down there, but that's at assets at risk, which is not the only way to look at the world. When you look at this through populations that are at risk, it flips it around. Miami goes down to the bottom. Oops, there we go. Goes down to the bottom, and what we find is we have these highly populated in developing countries often, so like Calcutta is the number one country. There's 14 million people who stand to be displaced by this. Where are they going to go? So the U.S. Department of Defense, back in 2014, and they've been saying this for a long time, have identified that climate refugees are going to be a problem we're going to have to look at. And Canada is going to have to make some decisions about that in the coming decades. How many climate refugees can we take in? When do we have to shut our doors? What's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario? How will we feed everyone? How are we going to survive? All those kinds of questions are going to become very real. So today, the consequences of war, we have refugees, and then tomorrow, consequences of climate change. So we're going to need to figure that out as a global community. A couple final things. Climate change is a medical emergency. That's from the Lancet Journal. And again, there's tons of information about that on there. This is actually, by the way, a two-hour presentation that I have chopped and chopped and chopped. You'll be glad to know I'm not giving you the two-hour version. He spent an hour and a half on this stuff in the presentation to us, by the end of which most of us were... And then he said, "Now, don't despair." Like, I already have. But then he pulled us back from the brink. So anyway, just a couple of little things, because this is often not mentioned, right, is the healthcare stuff that comes along with this, not just from the heat stroke and all that stuff, but things like tropical diseases are on the move, right? We start hearing about Zika virus in the United States. What? That's because the vectors are changing, right? They can go further from the equator. And so Zika is one of them. Here in Ontario, of course, what do we have? Ticks, right? Our dog that I told you guys we got a year ago. She's already had two of these things hang off her neck, right? And Lyme is a real problem. It's on the rise in Ontario, and it's not a pleasant situation. And the extinction. Scientists are saying we're in our sixth mass extinction, and guess who's causing it? We are. We risk losing up to 50% of all the land-based species in this century. We're seeing that the land and plant species are moving about 15 feet per day poleward. They're moving towards the cooler temperatures to try and find a climate that will suit them. The problem is they can only go so far, right? And so when they reach that limit, for whatever reason, their habitat just shrinks down and down and down. So that's part of what's happening. We've already lost more than half of the animals on our planet in the last 40 years. Those of you who are water lovers, ocean lovers, that's not faring any better. We've lost almost 50% since 1970. Put this in for Scott. I don't know where he is at the moment, but I put this in for Scott. These are our coral reefs. And of course, that's a whole other thing, but essentially, with the warmer temperatures, ocean acidification, and the extreme events that are happening, the coral reefs are being decimated. That's in Australia, and they'll tell you that their worst recorded bleaching in the Great Barrier Reef was in the last 2 years. Here in Ontario, we stand to lose our favorites like the barn owl and other, you know, sort of treasures. Of course, what would a climate change presentation be without a picture of a polar bear? I had to throw that in. And finally, animal agriculture. Again, huge topic, but it's something that we're going to have to look at. The resources that go into meat and dairy production are enormous, and the land use that is required to do that. But most importantly is the greenhouse gas emissions. It is more, according to the United Nations, than all of the planes, trains, and automobiles, and buses combined around the world is from animal production. So we have to look at that. All right, so the cost of carbon is high. I don't know if you can hear that. I haven't even actually talked about the actual cost. It's a Canadian insurance industry record of payouts. That big one on the right is 2013 when we had those big flooding events out west and in Ontario. The $3.5 billion. Guess who's going to be paying for that, right? That's going to just be passed on down to us for sure. And they say that by 2050, we're looking at $21 to $43 billion a year that it will cost us to handle the effects of climate change. So, are you feeling totally depressed? Have we done a good job? Must we change? I think the answer is pretty clear. We've got to make some changes for sure. The second question then is, well, can we? Like, because if we can't change, then don't even tell me about all that stuff. Just let me go on, right? The way I'm doing it. And the answer is good news. We have solutions at hand. I don't know if you can see that, but it's computers then and computers now, energy then and energy now, right? So we've come a long way in a lot of technological areas, but in our energy, we're still consuming that dirty energy from decades and decades before. So let's take a quick look. Green energy progress. So they predicted maybe 30 gigawatts by 2010. They beat that by a factor of 16 in 2016. Global wind energy capacity, I don't know if you can see that or not, but it's gone right up on the right-hand corner. And that's partly because the costs are coming down at such an incredible rate, which is what's going to need to happen in order to make that investment worthwhile for people. This is Denmark. One day they got 104% of their power needs from wind for 24 hours. In Scotland, in June of last year, the entire month, they were completely from wind. Their electricity source was all wind. This is England, you know, the home of coal production. They got their more electricity from wind than from coal in 2016. So, you know, countries are heading in this direction. This is Canada, installed wind power. And guess who's leading the way? Ontario and Quebec. Yeah, which is great. And, of course, it's providing jobs for people. Don't let anybody tell you, look, oh, we can't do that. It'll terrible for the economy. It's not true. It's not true. It's providing all kinds of jobs. We have more people working in Canada's green sector than we do in the oil sands. So what about solar? Even better. The estimate was 1 gigawatt by 2010. They beat that by 17. 2016, they had beat that 75 times over. I don't know why that's not finishing there. This is around the world, global PV installations of solar. And this is Canada. We're keeping right up. In fact, almost $3 billion by 2014 that we had put in around the country. And in Canada, we have the third largest solar panel producing company, which is, I think, fantastic for us. And again, it's because the cost is coming down, more and more people can invest. This is one of the things that really, you know, got me when he was presenting, because this is partly about access, right? Like, it's funny to see that, right? It looks like it's such a, doesn't seem to fit, right? Like, is this straw hut with this technology sticking on top of it? But it's providing access. So for me, that's a justice issue, right? There are communities out there, millions of people, who don't have access to energy. Now they do, right? Stick that on there, and that gives them access to the internet. They can, you know, teach their children. It's all these cascading benefits of this technology. This is Bangladesh. Same kind of thing. They're really getting on board with that. China is leading the way. India, who at the Paris climate talks were heading in the opposite direction, heading more in the direction of coal, has done a total U-turn. They've closed 37 coal plants in the last year, and both India and China are on track to not only meet but exceed their Paris commitments, which is fantastic. Chile is interesting. It started off kind of slow in the solar market. Now look what's happening. Look at that. It can be done. That's a result of policy change, right? That can be done. Very exciting. The reality is, and I find this fascinating, the Earth gets enough energy in 1 hour from the sun to fuel all the world's economies for a year. 1 hour, right? So if we could harvest just even some of that, imagine the impact on clean climate and air pollution, etc. So in the U.S., solar jobs, 17 times faster than the overall economy. The two fastest growing jobs, solar installers and wind turbine technicians. So again, this is not taking jobs away. It's just shifting them from this kind of work to this kind of work, similar to when the automobile replaced the horse and buggy, right? We can't put all those people out of work. Well, look at all the people now working in the automobile industry, right? So we've got to shift our thinking sometimes around some of those things. LED lights taking over the market by 2025. That's pretty much all you'll be able to buy. General Motors last fall said the future is all electric. This is a list of all the car companies who are currently moving towards electric vehicles to offer and offering them. All of them. They're all heading this direction. So, can we change? Let's hear it. Yes, we can. Obama. Yes, we can. So the question becomes, will we change? And I think there's good news here, too. Although, between you and me, I do have days when I feel, oh, my God, I'm not sure. But 99% of the time, I say, yes, we can, because humans are resilient. In 2015, virtually every nation signed on to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's never happened before. The whole world is agreeing on this and working to solve this problem. People are marching in the streets. This is kind of funny. I'll share with you. So that's the White House, right? That's people's march on the White House. And so Al Gore was like, never when I was in the White House did I think I'd be marching on the White House. And then he was like, that's me right in the corner. Can you see the red shirt? I can see that. He's very sweet. And in Toronto, we were doing the same thing, right? More than 10,000 people marching. Ontario, we're the first province to set those greenhouse gas targets. We closed the coal plants in 2014. Vancouver is set to be 100% renewables in 20 years. That's a phenomenal target for them. Vancouver is one of the leading cities in the world on this issue. I'd encourage you, if you're interested in what Toronto is doing, to look up TransformTO. We are actually doing quite a bit. In 2018, there are 10 massive projects that are on the go around retrofitting vehicles and TTC and all kinds of things. So you can check that out online. And so, it's a human story. Often people will say, well, this is such a sad, depressing story. And it can be, or it can be just, it's a human story. And so it's full of complexities and contradictions, right? It's depressing and it's inspiring. It's frustrating and there are possibilities, right? It's sort of that good news, bad news, progress and setbacks and devastation and possibility are all mixed in there. So As I wrap up here, I just want to say to you that, you know, I heard someone say climate change is not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It's a choice. It's an opportunity for us as humans to make some decisions. And there are good reasons for hope, right? There are millions of people working on this problem. And the reality is, the climate reality is, that as was said earlier, any little thing that you do, any tiny little thing that you do in this direction makes you part of a network of people who are working to solve this problem. Right? And I think that there's real beauty in that. So I want to close with, what can you do? Because that's always the question, right? So you load people up with, oh my God, we got to do something. Well, so what can we do? And there are lots of answers to that. I'm going to get you to answer that actually just briefly. But because you don't want to stay here, right? Because that's not helpful. And I heard somebody say, and I think you sort of have to be in the right place at the right time to hear this kind of message, but it hit me, and it was the message of, we don't have the luxury of getting depressed about this because there isn't time, right? So get over it and get on to the work at hand. And so again, you know, it has to hit you maybe at the right time, but that really spoke to me. There isn't time to be down about this. We just have to get going on it. So I'll share with you four high impact actions that came from the United Nations work on this. And then I'm going to get you to do 2 minutes on that. Because their high-impact actions may not apply to most of us. Don't have another kid. Well, most of us in this room have already checked that box, right? So check! Look at all I'm doing for the environment. Not having another child. Live car-free. Well, I mean, you know, in the way our cities are set up, I can't imagine the amount of time it would take me to get anywhere if I took the TTC everywhere. Just coming in from Oshawa, I was here Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and today, right? How many hours would I have? So you know, you got to be realistic about this stuff too, right? Avoid one round-trip transatlantic flight. Most of us can do that. And the fourth thing the UN says is eat a plant-based diet, which is interesting. So, you know, provide resources to help people move in that direction. But I want you to have a two-minute conversation just with the people sitting next to you. So, like, try and group in at least three people. And I want you to think about this in three categories and see what you come up with in your little groups. Personally, what can you do? What can you do? What do you already know? You guys are already all over this. And, you know, that's the thing. Last Sunday, I was scheduled to do a presentation similar to this in Orillia. Do you remember what last Sunday was? A frickin' ice storm. So I drove up there in the ice storm. And so they were expecting, you know, initially 150, 200 people to come to this thing. They had advertised it widely. The mayor of Orillia was there. The MPP was there. And I was, oh my God. And anyway, of course, it's an ice storm. So who shows up for the environmental presentation during an ice storm? The environmentalists, right? All the people who already know all this stuff. So I was like, oh my God. And you guys are not dissimilar, right? This community is all over this stuff. Again, I think there is value in seeing it all sort of put together in a package and having a serious conversation about it. So that's what I'm going to invite you to do. 90 seconds, 2 minutes, not long, because I know, I'm not sure what the time is, but I know we're probably need to wrap up. So have a quick conversation. What can you do personally? What can we do as a community here at West Hill or in your other communities of which you're a part? And politically, what can you do? Questions? You got 3 minutes, 2-3 minutes, go. Makes all the difference. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, just wrap up your thoughts. Okay, just wrap up your last thoughts. I hate interrupting good conversation, but I know people probably want to go home. Walter just told me to shut up. He's busy talking. If I start with you guys, would you be willing to say a comment?
Sure.
Okay.
How did you get back from Aruya that night?
I drove in the ice storm. I drove. Okay, I'm going to stop you there, not because I want to, because, you know, I don't want you to leave going, oh my gosh, it took so long. But I want to give you a chance to share some of what you came up with just for 2 or 3 minutes. I've been finding that often people are leaving saying, you know, the information was good, but that was so valuable when we got a chance to share with each other, which of course is always the way, right? The wisdom's in the group. So I want to give you a chance just to hear some of what you said. You have the mic. Do you want to just share one or two things that you guys came up with? Got a green light, but he's not on.
One of the things that we shared was...
I think you're on now.
One of the things that we shared was thinking about how we deal with our life in little pieces rather than looking at it and saying, oh my goodness, this is too big. Mm-hmm. So an example is going into a grocery store and saying, okay, so I'm in a grocery store. What can I do here in the grocery store that will lead me to be more environmentally conscious? So around things like saying, okay, so I'm going... Everybody goes into a grocery store. If you buy a couple of apples, what do most people do? They put them into a plastic bag that's in rolls and rolls and rolls and rolls, and half of them are on the floor or in the counter. Yeah. And bringing your own bags to do that. And I think many of us learn how to bring the grocery bag to take stuff away, but also package product that's wrapped up already. And so it's not so much that little thing. It's just being in that place of saying, I'm in the grocery store. What can I do here?
Beautiful.
The same thing in your kitchen and with your closet, with your clothes. Try and take off a little something you can take a bite of rather than trying to swallow the whole elephant.
Otherwise, it's just too overwhelming. Yeah, what's that phrase? How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time,
right? Yeah. Take a couple more.
Well, we're in a big decision facing our federal government between whether they're going to support a pipeline from Alberta, who has more sun and wind than any other province in the country and has been just dedicated to digging out the tar sands, as opposed to forcing it across BC, where the people have decided that despite the promise of jobs, they don't want their environment ruined. Our environment, because we all belong to the coastline.
Yeah. Yep. Beautiful.
I think you guys. Trudeau has to hear from more of us.
So that's in that third category around political. Yeah. Fantastic. Anybody else? What about you guys over here? You want to share anything that you came up with in your little groups?
Yeah.
Stop using water bottles. Does anybody here still use plastic water bottles? Bring your own bottles. Yeah. Ruth.
Well, certainly with politics, it's really important. It's really hard when you go to all candidates' meetings. Usually, well, I know with our Scarborough-Bitchman community, we could never get our questions up to the front. We would all write questions, but they wouldn't take them. So the idea of having a political action year where we can actually have some control of what the questions are is magnificent.
Thank you to Don.
And then the other thing is to write your, you know, individually take a few minutes and even just write a few pointers down and get that letter to your MPP, your MP, your city councilor, whatever it is. It really makes a huge difference. Petitions don't have the same power as individual action.
Yeah. Thanks, Ruth. Yeah. Take one there and then I'll take two or three from this side and then we'll wrap up.
On the same
as water bottles. I think we should be writing Gail and Weston to, why are those bottles on sale? Why are they on the front page of the flyer? Why is he promoting them, other companies as well? I think also we should be writing people like McDonald's and Tim Hortons and Arby's, that they should be paying people to go and pick up their cups and their garbage that people are tossing on our beaches and in our parks and in our communities. We need to write letters more and more. The other election that's coming up is Doug Ford, who does not want carbon tax, and so we really have to be more politically active, even just writing letters.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Anybody over here want to share what you talked about in your little groups? There was a lot of buzz in the room.
Waka Waka is, is a company that Greta found that sells solar-powered flashlights. Like, you can recharge them all the time. And if you buy one, they send one to a refugee camp. So they can charge it all day long and have light in the evening. So when we were talking about companies that will do that, they've got an innovative thing and they're giving to someone else. That's a beautiful thing to support. Waka Waka, I don't know how to spell that. I can imagine, but I don't know how to spell it.
Yeah, so voting with your dollars for companies that are doing the right thing. Anybody in here?
I want to say, been in Alberta, they have lots of wind power going out there and solar. So it's not just...
It's not either or. Yeah, yeah. All right.
For a short period of time last year, the provincial government offered a subsidized solar panel program to people that would sign up. There are lots of questions about that. Was it a scam? How much it was going to cost? And Louise and I had many painful discussions about this. I was the one that was actually holding back. At any rate, we did buy into it. The scheme is such that right now, while Louise is away, there's a big box in our driveway that's 6 feet wide and 12 feet long. It weighs about 3,000 pounds. And over the next 2 days, the solar panels will be installed on our roof facing south. We have a big south-facing roof. And this electricity will come down from those panels and be distributed back into the grid. And we are now in the business of selling electricity to Power One. We've also signed that off, so that's going to pay for the panels. But it was a very innovative program, and people subscribed so quickly that they shut it down. So we got in early.
Anybody want to make a final comment? Last comment.
That's one of the things that we said tonight, was that it should be just become mandatory. Like, insulation is mandatory when you're building a home. So those hot water tanks that only instant hot water, panels, I don't know about wind at a smaller level, but it should just be part of the house, part of purchasing homes. The same way with cars. It should just be part of, that's the only car you can purchase.
Yeah.
But if that's a lobbying issue, I recognize.
Yeah. If you read some of the predictions for Ontario, sort of best case, worst case scenarios and stuff like that, often... They're describing an Ontario where that's just part of building a home. You have to make it net zero emissions. It's just how the house is built now. Do you want to make a last comment? Yes, electric vehicle. They have this $14,000 off right now. Get your electric vehicle today. Yes. All right. So thank you for jumping in there and having that kind of good conversation. That's the kind of stuff people actually remember when they leave, right? Just some other things that I can offer to you, obvious things. Buy energy-saving appliances. Buy local and organic. Divest. Did anybody talk about divesting? That's a big one. It's a bit risky, and there's all kinds of complications, but that is a big option to look at. Buying carbon offsets. Oh, so like you have investments in your bank, and they're investing your money in various things. And so basically you'd be going into your bank. They say it's usually about 5 to 10% that it would be affected. But you'd be going in and saying basically, I no longer want to make money off the companies who are adding to the pollution in our environment. So pull whatever stocks you have of mine out of those companies. I'm not willing to do that. And or I want to invest in these companies who are doing that. So what's that? Ethical stocks, yeah, yeah. And carbon offsets, is that familiar to you? That's some of the things I've been learning about. So you can, so for instance, if you need to take a plane somewhere, there are companies where you can buy offsets. And so you pay a fee, not often very much, like $20, that kind of thing, and they will plant trees or they'll invest in green technology that would offset the carbon that you are emitting by this particular activity. So that's something else to look into. In terms of community, talk to those who pay the bills and encourage them to make choices that will save them money and also save the environment. And in terms of political, of course, we've talked about this. Tell your leaders this matters to you. That quote at the bottom, you can't see it, but Al Gore, his quote is, changing laws is as important as changing light bulbs. So we need to do both. It's not one or the other. And join the Climate Reality Project. Look them up online and get involved with this great organization. I said to John when he told me about his Jane Goodall video this morning, I said, oh my gosh, I'm closing out with her quote, one of her quotes. And she says, it's only when our clever brain and our human heart work together in harmony that we can achieve our true potential. That's Jane Goodall. So we're kind of bookending with her. So use your voice, use your vote, use your choices. Join the people who are doing that to fight the climate crisis that we are facing. And as Al Gore says, speak truth to power like your world depends on it, because your world depends on it. Thank you.
We usually take a little bit of time to reflect on it, but I'm going to ask. Yeah. I'm going to ask. We did that in the session. We had a verbal reflection. Man, thank you. Thank you so much. Isn't it wonderful to have somebody in here who cares so much about where we live and how we live and is so willing to be here and share that with us? Thank you, Deb. Usually in closing, I try and capture some thoughts, but I was so intent on listening that I struggled with it. The only thing that came to mind was twofold. One, in Jane Goodall's introduction, she talked about our interconnectedness, and that was part of our guided, grounded, growing. Grounded, guided, growing. I keep getting those mixed up. She talked about our interconnectedness, and that's just a huge piece of what's happening here and what we're talking about today. As I look at that, that's all in that must we. And it's, if you think about it, it's not must I, it's must we, right? Must we, can we, will we? And the we part of it is so hugely important to us. So as you leave here today, it's kind of like, go back to that very first slide that said, okay, here's a million things that you can do. We talked about them, you shared them with one another, and they were a wonderful first step. Being in here is around a big piece of being here is around that piece of growing in knowledge. And so we had the opportunity this morning to do just that. I mean, I feel a little taller, I feel a little stronger about my commitment, and I hope you do too. And I hope as you leave here today, you find ways to nurture that commitment and you find the will to make the changes that Deb has talked about this morning, and that I think we all embrace and hopefully embrace just a little bit tighter today. So go out into this world and be the change that you want to see.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.